Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Welcome to SAFC Unfiltered, sponsored by Alpha Security. It's the official podcast from Sunderland Football Club with myself, Frankie Francis, and former player Danny Collins. How are you doing, Danny?
I'm good, Frankie. Thank you.
Today we're going to be heading over to the academy to speak to Sunderland Chief Executive Jim Rodwell. I wouldn't say we've been summoned, but we've got the opportunity to go and speak to him and probably get up to speed of where the club's at. There's going to be a lot of questions, I guess, the fans want to know answers from. But it's good to know the inside workings of the club, especially at this particular time, Danny.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's always good to give the fans a little insight into what's actually going on at the club. Obviously, there's a lot of questions in terms of where we're at with the ownership and the possibility of a takeover, with what's going on with COVID and the possibility of the fans getting back into ground. So there's a lot to cover. The transfer windows closed last week. We can have a chat to him about the signings. So, yeah, as you say, I think there's a good bit for us to cover with Jim.
Yes, we'll be heading over there right now as well. A big game at the weekend as well, though, Danny. Portsmouth, you know, ourselves, though, unbeaten. We've got to go into that game with, you know, heads held high, I guess.
Yeah, of course, we're on a good run, unbeaten run. Looking, as you say, solid at the back, just the one goal conceded. Another good win during the midweek. And a tough game at the weekend coming up against Portsmouth, who've had a little bit of an indifferent start, but they had a good win themselves in midweek. So, again, it's tight up the top. Yes, it's early days in terms of looking at the league table, but as we've said previously, you want to be up in that pack of the front runners if we're to achieve our aim of getting an automatic promotion.
Yes, absolutely. Let's head over to the Academy of Light now so we can speak to Sunderland Chief Executive Jim Rodwell. Welcome to SAFC Unfiltered, Sunderland Chief Executive Jim Rodwell. How are you doing, Jim?
Good morning, guys. Lovely. Nice to be here, I think.
Yeah, we tried to make this happen during the summer. It didn't happen for various reasons, so we haven't had a chance to ask you yet. You've been at the club a few months now. How are you settling in?
Perfectly well. I'm in the location, and good, I think. If it wasn't for COVID, then life would be good.
Yeah, we'll come round to that, Jim. We're going to dive straight in, though. You've said before we've sat down this afternoon, you're more than happy to answer any questions, and you can imagine the fans have got a few questions.
I'm more than happy for you to ask any questions. I didn't say I could necessarily answer them. You can ask anything you like.
Well, let's start with the ownership, perhaps, of the club, Jim. Are you in regular contact with Stuart Donald?
I speak to all the directors.
Yeah.
Obviously, Stuart's still on the board of directors. He stepped down as chairman for reasons that he articulated at the time. But no, we are the board of directors, and the board of directors run the football club. We had a board meeting this week, and it's actually working pretty well. It's a challenging board. Nobody stands on their laurels. Everybody's prepared to challenge. But I regularly speak to all of our directors, including Stuart.
It was documented that the club were in a period of exclusivity with a party. Can you bring us up to speed on where we are at with that, and if it even was a period of exclusivity?
No, sure. We are in currently a period of exclusivity. I think things have gone on longer than anybody would have liked, predominantly due to COVID and the uncertainties caused by COVID. The party that we're in exclusivity with, they've shown us proof of funds. They're the only people to actually do so. You know, lots of people seem to, they're all over the internet claiming that they're close to buying the football club, but only one party has ever shown us proof of funds and given us a credible plan to take the football club forwards. And that's the party that we're currently involved in exclusivity with. They've been uber professional all the way throughout this period. But the simple fact remains that we are in a COVID world. We haven't got fans in the stadium. We haven't got a bailout at the moment. Huge uncertainty. It's making matters very difficult until we get some kind of certainty from probably government. Then, these matters are going to progress, I guess.
So this exclusivity with this group of people or persons, Is this a regular conversation? Is it a week-by-week conversation where negotiations are taking place? Or is it a matter of time or a matter of certainty from the government until
it's almost,
we get to the
it's
end
almost
of it?
Less about negotiations, you know, how these things generally work. There's proof of funds, there's a viable plan, it's about credibility. You know, a deal's then agreed broadly between the buyers and the sellers, and then obviously that period of due diligence starts to happen. They will send their lawyers and accountants and goodness knows what type of people into a data room that we control. And, you know, they'll take their time poring over that. And that, of course, in turn leads to many, many, many questions over a period of time. So that's what then tends to happen. They do the period of due diligence, conversations then kind of recommence between buyer and seller. And hopefully then you have to draw what's called an SPA, a share purchase agreement, and you move towards completion. No, not dissimilar, to be honest with you, to buying a house, just on a bigger scale with more moving parts. But, you know, matters are progressing as well as they possibly can do. But of course, there are questions that we at the football club simply can't answer, as I alluded to, as regards COVID. That is the uncertainty. But, you know, so I think if you're, you know, you're almost buying the football club, aren't you, looking at the worst possible scenario? Yeah. That's what people look into, and how much it's going to cost if we don't get a bailout and we don't get fans in the stadium. But no, the people, the prospective owners, have been incredibly patient, and they've been incredibly diligent and credible. So, you know, there's no more anybody could have done, to be honest with you.
So you legally can't speak about those people or persons, but can you speak about people who are voicing claims that they are in advanced talks or perhaps very near to completing a deal to own the club? There's a person who is very prominent on the internet called William Story, who has publicly announced that he is in advanced talks with the club, and it would only be a matter of time before the club comes under his ownership. Could you answer a straight question and say, is William Story involved in the exclusive?
I can't talk about individuals at all. I can't, you know, I'm subject to the same confidentialities as everybody else. We are only in talks with one set of people at the moment, and they're the people we're in exclusivity with, hence the term exclusivity. We're exclusive with them. All I can say as a general comment is lots and lots of people have said they're interested, they're close, I'm going to buy the football club, and none of those people have ever shown us proof of funds or a credible plan about how we take this forward. But it would be unprofessional and completely inappropriate for me to, I appreciate it's a straight enough question, but it would be completely inappropriate for me to comment on specific individuals like that.
Okay. You mentioned COVID-19 and how it's having an effect, not just on ownership, but on the club as a whole. You've never seen a full stadium alight, have you? Or it's a, you know, Danny's played in a full stadium alight, all the staff here have been there, and the fans, obviously. It's a real thing to behold, Jim, and you haven't had that experience yet.
It's a thing that keeps me going, to be perfectly honest with you. Thinking about trying to get that stadium full, you know, trying to get the League One trophy at the end of the season with fans in there is, you know, we've all got to have hope, we've got to have something to aspire to, and that's what keeps me going, as does it people around the building. I mean, listen, COVID's, there's so much written and spoken about COVID. First things first, that there are people in far worse positions than us. There are people losing loved ones, which is far more significant than football. But all we can try to concentrate on here is protecting the football club and doing the very best we can in under difficult circumstances. And at the moment, I think that's what we're doing. The staff have pulled together brilliantly, as have the players, the off-field playing staff. It's a really difficult time, a really difficult time. But, you know, it is for everybody.
Where are we at then with a possible return for fans? I believe earlier in the season, we were almost a few days away from getting a small amount of people into the ground. And I know that the health and safety and security people at the club have been working hard on match day bubbles as well. Can you just bring us up to speed of where we're at and when we can see a possible return?
Sure. Well, taking it back a little bit, we started the season, we, football collectively as the EFL, we started the season really on the basis that we were hoping to have fans in the stadium. Probably from the beginning of October, because that is what the Prime Minister told us was going to happen. The amount of work that actually went into creating the bubbles of six that were required was astonishing. But I tell you, it was also heartening to see when you actually see the BLC in particular, how hard they worked with their fan groups, getting people into groups of six people. The capacity was limited to about 11,000. So 11,000 was roughly the number that we thought we would start the season with fans in. So I think we were aiming for the Blackpool game, which, if memory serves me, was October the 10th. We actually thought we might get some fans in the stadium prior to that. I think it was against the Peterborough match. We thought we might even have reduced capacity light. So we were hoping to get 5,000 or 6,000 people in for the Peterborough game, which might have been 26th of September, something like that. And we were ready to go. I mean, people worked incredibly hard. The cleaning of the stadium, you know, how we have to keep people safe, the bubbles of six, how the supporters groups rallied round and helped. The guys, we have a COVID team here. I mean, the regulation was incredible. And then simply the Prime Minister decided to pull the plug on that. And we still have got no certainty since then. I think the comment was that the return to play has been delayed, and it's still delayed. And we have no clarity on that whatsoever. I mean, it's soul destroying, to be perfectly honest with you, for those people that have worked so hard to put us into the position. And we as football are absolutely convinced that we can have people in the football stadium in a socially distanced fashion safely. Football had pilot events that all went incredibly well. We were ready, we were able, and the rug was pulled from underneath us. And I think the hardest thing to really accept about that was the lack of rationale. You know, when we see things that are going on at the moment, Arsene Wenger at the Palladium a few weeks ago, you know, theatres are full, and we're just getting told for no real apparent reason we cannot have fans in the stadium. That's soul destroying. That really is soul destroying.
Yeah, I think when you see, as you say, look, whether it's theatres or the Palladium and enclosed buildings with probably crowds which holds 2,000, whereas, as you say, you've got outdoor arenas, stadium that holds 49,000. If you get 10,000 in there at an open air venue, it's what people want, isn't it?
What I found incredibly frustrating, I don't know if any of you watched the DCMS Select Committee last Wednesday prior, when they were questioning Oliver Dowd and the Secretary of State. And one of our own MPs, Julie Elliott, is on the Secretary of State, and she did an excellent job actually questioning the Secretary of State and holding him to task. But when he was asked that direct question, well, how come this could happen last night at the Palladium and we can't have fans in a football ground, there is no answer. There is no answer, and there's no rationale to those two things. And I think what really disappoints me, the answers now almost seem to become quite flippant. The football doesn't seem particularly important to, you know, whether it's important to government. They say it is, but they don't really demonstrate that at all. Because the thing is, sooner or later, football clubs are going to go bust. I mean, that's just a simple fact. Without a bailout, without fans in the stadium, football clubs will go bust. And with that, and by and large, a lot of these will be red wall towns. They will be working class towns from the north. That's how these things operate. And when the football club goes, the ladies team goes, the academy goes, the foundation go, all the businesses that support the football club, the baker, the guy who supplies the meat, all those businesses suffer. And there just doesn't seem to be enough recognition of that, to be perfectly honest with you. Opera seems to be, just have no problem with opera, but opera seems to be acceptable, the football outside isn't. And I just want somebody to explain to us why that's the case. Why can I get on a Ryanair flight?
Yeah.
I'm mid-rant now, Danny.
No, you're okay.
Why can I get on a Ryanair flight with a mask on
and
sit next to a complete stranger hemmed in, but I can't go to a football club even with a mask on? It makes no sense. And when I get asked, when I've asked that question, the only answer I've had back from a fairly senior politician was, it's economic necessity in the airline industry. And at that stage, I think to myself, you clearly do not understand what's going on in football because crowds are an economic necessity to football. Yeah. And it's not just about money, it's about everything that they bring with us. Mm. Because the one thing that's been proven to us throughout all of this is that without fans in the stadium, our product is pretty average.
You know,
the stadium of lights, you know, we love the place, but empty Teary, is a very different place. Somebody described it the other day like the Marie Celeste.
Yeah.
And it is. You know, I think the players were doing a wonderful job trying to create atmosphere and try to create intensity. But it's incredibly difficult. So yeah, to say Wef, I'm frustrated, I'm concerned, and I'm incredibly disappointed about the way we as an industry have been treated.
How often are you yourself and other people with similar roles from other clubs lobbying the government to say, come on, open the doors now? And is there something in the fact that Oliver Dowden, his title is he covers media, culture and sport? Do you think there's not a specific enough, you were mentioning, they don't understand the economy around a football club. Do you think there's perhaps not a government department representative of sport enough?
Well, I think that's almost certainly the case. Like you said, DCMS is a kind of mishmash of all types of things, isn't it? From opera to football, I think things like piracy and internet provision all comes within that. And that's pretty wide ranging, I agree. Maybe it's just, you know, it goes to show you where sport really sits in the grand scheme of things for government. I don't know, but you know, football is incredibly important. You look at the Premier League, it's probably one of the most credible exports we've produced in this country in the last 50 years. It's incredibly successful. You know, football produces billions of pounds for the exchequer. But, you know, we're in a dangerous place at the moment. When I say we, I'm not talking necessarily about Sunderland specifically. I'm talking about we as an industry. And I think I just speak for many, many people doing my job within football that we're incredibly frustrated. And to answer your question, yes, we are lobbying, screaming, shouting on a regular basis. But what really concerns me is I think people will start to sit up and take notice when 3, 4, 5 clubs go to the wall, and then all of a sudden,
it's too late.
I think it's too late to save those football clubs, because when they're gone, they're gone. Bury, Macclesfield, terrible stories, they're gone. You know, we need to act now on what is a relatively, in the grand scheme of things, small amount of money.
Is that why you came out after the Project Big Picture was announced and said that you were positive about the ideas? You said it had some elements which you would like to negotiate or change, but you, generally speaking, you were in favour of Project Big Picture. Is that one of the reasons then?
Absolutely. I mean, it was far from perfect, but somebody's got to start a proposal somewhere and they generally end in a different place. I think what I said at the time, from what I'd seen, it was well worthy of consideration. It was and is. If we're talking about a redistribution of wealth amongst the divisions to make football more sustainable, how can you not be in favour of that? It makes perfect sense. At the moment in the EFL, if you look at how much money is lost collectively on an annual basis, then it's quite clear that the model is broken. And it doesn't need to be, because there is plenty of money within football to pay people astonishingly well. But it's just too lopsided at the moment. So I think doing away with parachute payments, levelling out that money, you know, making a softer landing for teams that are relegated from the Premier League into the Championship. And what you need to basically do is cool that arms race in the Championship. It's trying to reach the promised land that effectively fuels inflation as much as anything else in the Championship. And you're looking, you know, on an average year, you're looking at £14 million per club. It averages out as cumulative losses. They're huge figures that nobody enjoys. So I think that was one element of it that I really quite liked the look of. But there were things in there that were clearly imperfect.
Do you think the gap's getting bigger as well, Jim, from League One, League Two, obviously? The conference getting bigger between the Championship and the Premier League. It's grown.
Well, clearly, we've League One by the narrowest of margins voted in a salary cap this year.
Yeah,
and you know, our position was quite clear with Sunderland. We weren't necessarily against salary caps. We thought it was set at the wrong level.
Yeah,
that's where we got to. But you've got £2.5 million. In League One, and then what's been mooted in the Championship is they didn't bring one in this summer.
So 14 million,
18 million.
So
I think it's a figure
stepping it.
And from anybody to jump from 2.5 to 18 is a huge step to take. Now Sunderland, should we be able to get in the Championship, are probably better placed than most to be able to compete. It'd be exciting, obviously, but we think we could be really competitive at that level. But nevertheless, the idea of spreading the money more evenly across all three divisions.
Yeah.
And of course, you're not particularly talking about Premiership teams being any worse off, by the way. Nobody's talking about them being any worse off. They're talking about losing two places. But they've been talking about that for a long, long time. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, to be honest with you.
And you mentioned the salary cap then. We should talk about the transfer window and Sunderland's business in general. Danny, you've got some points on the transfer window. You've noticed we've still brought quite a few players in, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, well, looking at it, there's 9, well, 10 if you include Tom Flanagan re-signing as well.
Sure.
Overall, would you assess, I mean, obviously the wage cap will have played a part in perhaps the recruitment and the standard of player we're looking to bring into the club. Overall, how would you assess how the budget's been spent and the players that have come in the window?
I'm really pleased where we are. Obviously, we submitted our squad numbers and our salary cap figures this week, Thursday, I think it was, Wednesday, Thursday. And I'm quietly confident. I'm pleased with the business that we've done. It's been a very bizarre summer, to be honest with you. It seems to have dragged on forever. And I'm really pleased with the business we've done, which I think is being reflected on what people see on the pitch at the moment. We've got lots of options all over the place. Luke O'Nine is, you know, we've now discovered a new left-sided centre-half called Luke O'Nine. Who would have thought? And players, Lyndon Gooch has played all over the pitch. Yeah. So, you know, we're in a decent position. Connor's come in the last couple of games. You know, it's desperately unfortunate we've had the injury to Arbinett. But, you know, these things happen in football. So I'm really pleased with the way that we've
I think
there's a lot more to come from us as well.
Yeah, just looking at it, you think you've got a nice, solid squad there. And within, say, a couple of weeks there, we've had a few injuries. As you say, you've touched on Morgan Feeney's injured as well.
Sure.
We've got 3 or 4 lads at the back. Tom Flanagan suspended. Then you have to go out again, don't you, and try and get another couple of boys in what you've done this week.
That's exactly what happened last Friday. We brought in Dion, which I'm really thrilled about. And Callum's come in just this week, who was unattached. And Callum just gives us a little bit more balance down the left.
Yes.
We haven't got an awful lot of left footers in the squad.
Just pushes down.
So he gives us that balance. And he's hungry. He's hungry that, you know, he wants to have a career at this level. He wants to play for a club like Sunderland. I think he'll be really interesting for us.
How's that recruitment process been without the likes of Tony Corton, Richard Hill? From the outside as well, the club don't seem to have anyone filled in that chairman role. Academy manager was again someone who's gone out and maybe not publicly replaced. And the under-18s manager, although the under-23s has been strengthened, which we haven't seen for many years at Sunderland. We'll go backwards. Does the fact that Sunderland don't have a chairman on paper, does that affect the daily running of the club?
You know what? No, I don't. I was going to be more flippant than that, but no, I don't. You know, Stuart's the biggest single shareholder. Stuart's obviously, you know, still around. He's still on the board of directors. We have a board of directors that runs the football club, the same as any businesses. It's the directors that are responsible for the running of, and the shareholders obviously own it. And do you know what? We're a really effective bunch, to be honest with you. It does seem we have a nice blend on there with David, Tom, Neil, myself, Stuart, Angela. You know, we've got a decent blend on there. So really, it hasn't made that much of a difference at all, to be perfect.
Does that cover the academy manager as well?
It's a different thing altogether, to be honest with you. The academy manager role, I'll be perfectly honest with you, we interviewed, we ran a process, I offered the job to one individual who for various reasons wasn't in a position to accept, and I just wasn't convinced. I wasn't convinced. And the one thing that I'm absolutely not going to do is just employ somebody for the sake of employing somebody. And it's exactly the same as the 18s position, though. The two 18s positions are just kicking on at the moment anyway. We're just moving forward with that recruitment element of it. But what I'm not going to do, I always see vacancies as an opportunity, to be honest with you, to get in good people, get the right people. But you've got to be convinced. And it's not just me. I think the final selection panel with the academy manager consisted of myself, Phil Parkinson, and Angela Lowndes, one of our directors. So, you know, it's not just me, you know, wielding a big stick and I'm the king of this. You know, it's getting other people's buy-in and other people's opinions, and other people see different things. So all it is, we won't appoint anybody until we can find the right candidate. and we shall keep looking. But the under-18s are ongoing at the moment.
And what was the thought process in strengthening the under-23s? It's been well documented over the last couple of seasons. They've had a hard time of it. Was that something from the manager, the first team manager, who said they want strength in the under-23s to draw upon? Or was that something you saw when you came to the club?
I think it was the manager. I think it was the board. It was the ownership. You know, the under-23s have struggled in the last couple of years. We need to be more competitive in that space. And because of salary caps, the 23s, I mean, I hate the term 23s, to be honest with you. League One, well, big League One football club, but we're in League One. And effectively, I look at our 23s as a reserve team. Yeah. That's what it should be. Lots of them, you know, we can only have a squad of a maximum of 22 players over 21 in the first team. We've actually only listed, we've got 20. So people like Dan Neal, Jack Diamond, Benji's now back in the building, Elliot when he gets fit again. But all these guys are training with the manager on a regular basis anyway. So, you know, it's that kind of intersection between the 18s and the first team. And reserves is a better way of looking at it for me. And we needed to be better. We needed better players in that space to be able to challenge in the first team as well, because the pathway to our first team should never really have been clearer than it is at the moment, because we're in League One. In the Premier League, clearly you're looking at the most elite of players, but at the moment that pathway should be clear. And I think we signed some good players in the 23s. We haven't seen enough yet. Kenton Richardson, Kenton's been injured. Obviously Morgan, that you touched on earlier, has been injured. Josh Hawkes has been catching the eye in the 23s. And, you know, we've been, other than this week, we've been fairly pleased with the way that things have gone. At least we can see some sort of progression and we look better, which is desperately important.
I think the annoying thing from the fans' point of view over the last few years is, you know, they're seeing some of the young boys who have not becoming a feeder club as such, but United's, sure, you know, some of these big clubs are coming in and taking the boys, sure, you know, for a small fee.
Yeah.
They want to see the likes of, you say there, Jack Diamond and Dan Neal getting their chance to push in, go from the 23s, make that step up and get into the first team.
Well, the manager's shown this season he'll play them. He brought Jack on the other day at Swindon, did very well. And I think they'll all have a part to play. I think Dan will play this season. I'm sure he'll contribute. The same with Benji. I think Benji, when he gets really up to speed, I think Benji's something different to what we've got. You know, Phil can look round on his bench and see a Benji to maybe give us that little injection of pace. So I think they'll all have a part to play. And you're talking now about guys that, you know, are 19, 20, 21. You should be developing into a first-team player. But that's
some of these other boys, they'll see Daniel, Jack Diamond getting the chance in the first, and that's going to be their targets, hasn't it, moving forward to push themselves and to get into that squad. Sure.
Unbeaten in the league this season, Jim. Great
Touch
start.
Wood, long may it continue. Tough game tomorrow.
Yep, big game against Portsmouth. How have you seen the action?
Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it, watching... If you come from a Scunthorpe and you go to a Sunderland, and at times, I think we've played really well in the vast majority of games. I think we've controlled football matches. We don't look like we're going to concede. I think it's one goal, which was a penalty in all the games. I think everybody who's played at the back, Bailey's been a revelation for us. I think long may that continue. I think we've been good. I think we've controlled matches. I mean Grant Ledbetter for me has probably been our best player to date, and hopefully if he puts in another 40 performances like that, we'll be in the right place. But Grant's done really, really well. I think we've played well. I think we've created chances. I think the forward players probably wish they'd stuck one or two more away, but I think that'll come in time. I think we look incredibly hard to beat. I think we look a professional outfit. I think the game at Crewe on Tuesday was very typical of the way we've been. I thought we controlled the game. We dominated the game. But you've got to kill people off. Yeah. And then obviously if somebody's in the game, they're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, they're going to have a go, and you know, we all have a nervy 10-15 minutes. But the reality is, you even look at Crewe, who I think are a good footballing team with some good players, didn't really create anything, did they?
No.
You know, I look at Burgey and see how many saves he's really had to make this season, and touch wood, he hasn't. But I think tomorrow will be our biggest test to date. I think we know what Portsmouth stand for. They'll be big, strong, organised, dominant from set pieces. Kenny's clearly a very good, very experienced manager, and it's going to be a tough game. So tomorrow will give us an idea of how far we've come. But at the moment, I don't think we can ask an awful lot more. I think even the two games we've drawn, I think we should have beat Charlton.
Yeah.
I think we should have beat them. I thought our first half performance against Charlton was excellent, and the same against Bristol Rovers. We go a goal down in the first minute, But after that, I thought their keeper made some great saves, and we probably should have won that one as well. But at the moment, we're sat in where we're sat in, and we've just got to keep building on it. I think we've got 20 games between now and the middle of January. I mean, it's an astonishing amount of matches. So it's going to be about squad size and how we condition our players and how we rehab. You know, Nick Allenby's worked incredibly hard with the players to get them to the levels they are now. And, you know, we've got the manager and Parky and Nick and his squad and the medical staff here, and they've just got to look, it's about looking after people as much as anything else at the moment. And by mid-January, it'll be interesting to see what the league looks like.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, obviously watching the games as well, I think we've had a good solid start to the season. As you touched on, for me, probably the first 45 minutes at Charlton was the best we've played without scoring a goal, wasn't it? I think with the position we're in, the squad, you tend to near enough pick itself the starting 11, albeit we've had a few injuries. Yeah. So I think it's been good where, as you touched on, Luke O'Nien, he's been shifted around. It's good that we've got lads who come in, know their roles. You can see, I think they've been well drilled into the 3-5-2, what the gaff has been playing this year. And just to kick on, as you say, tomorrow, I think the top four teams are playing against each other, so it's important. Yes. We go out there against Portsmouth and come away with a good result tomorrow, and it'll be a tough test, won't it?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I'd agree with that.
And fans have been, you know, because we spoke earlier about not being able to get in the ground, the club's invested in the streaming services available to the fans.
That's you guys are a prime example.
Well, that's
the multi-million-pound contracts that you guys have signed with us, and it's bearing fruit. So,
but
yeah, absolutely,
you've recognised, the club's recognised that, you know, this is the only portal of which the fans can watch every single game. There's been investment into the media department because of that. There's an app now as well as the ever evolving match day programme, which me and Danny, of course, are involved in as well, and a podcast as well.
I think we're just trying to do everything we possibly can. Everybody's missing their fix of live football at the moment. So we sat down and we're doing everything we possibly can just to engage with our fan base, really. You guys are doing a great job. People seem to like it. Obviously, you've touched on the app, which is, I think, people are going to be really, really excited about. We're really looking forward to showing you that. And then when fans can get back in the stadium, we've had the stadium Wi-Fi enabled, which is going to be really quite exciting. So there are lots of things going on. I understand the fans' frustration at the time because they can't see it or feel it and touch it. And you know, lots of things are work in progress. But it's something that we've made a real conscious effort to invest in and do better, hopefully, and give people the best fix of football we possibly can at the moment. And you guys are, you know, this isn't me trying to get you to go easy on me. You guys are doing a great job. People like it.
Yeah. I think it's tough, as you say, for fans, certainly in the North East, I've found in my time when I played up here, that they live and breathe football, don't they? So Saturday, for a lot of lads, you know, they'll go and have a couple of pints before the game, won't they, in the pubs, and they make a day of it, really, whereas now they're having to sit in their living rooms and watch the games. It's completely different.
It's the whole experience of it. It's, you know, I've been to Sunderland before when there's 30, 40,000 people in the stadium. And it's not just the stadium, it's coming to the stadium. You know, I'm missing the craziest things. Being stuck in a traffic jam, the smell of burgers outside the ground. You know, people see their mates, they go for a couple of pints, you turn up at the game, you're happy, you're sad. It's, you know, now you're turning up for a game, you're driving straight into the stadium at 2:45, and you're driving out there at 5:00, and it really is, you know, hardly a woe is me, I'm fortunate that I'm allowed in, but it's very, very peculiar, it really is. And it's just the whole build-up. It's, you want people going to football matches, you want that whole fan experience.
But hopefully we'll get there again soon.
We will.
Jim. And that's why we're doing things like this podcast. Have you listened to any of the podcasts yet with any of the players?
I have listened to some of the podcasts. That's wrong. I haven't listened to some of the podcasts. I listen to all of the podcasts.
That's good. That's the.
And I've got some ideas about some potential guests for you going forward. We'll talk about that later.
Throw them over.
They've been great, and the figures on them are good. The people that listen to them are good. You know, people are missing their fix of football.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do what we can.
Well, if you're a regular listener, you'll know that Danny has a quiz. You know, during lockdown, and we're kind of having another lockdown right now, but Danny's a bit of a Zoom quiz master. He's going to throw some questions at you. Now, Luke O'Nien's top of the league at the moment.
You put me on the spot here. But and it makes it even worse now. If I can't get more than Luke... That could be my resignation at that point. So this is a seminal moment.
Well, Danny, told me.
Yeah, we've got a cluster of obviously five. I think five of the lads are on 2 out of 5, and Luke's just edged above him at the minute.
Well, you should have asked me the same questions as Luke. Then again, I could have cheated then, couldn't I? Yeah,
okay. Luke hadn't heard of the Royal Family, you know, the TV show.
Not, well, I'm surprised Luke has heard of the actual Royal Family.
Well,
imagine.
That's what he said, is it about the Queen? So we left it at that with that one. But yeah, five questions. So question number one. From which country does halloumi cheese originate?
The obvious answer is Greece.
Cyprus.
Oh, it's very close,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah. Cyprus.
Well, sorry, you say it's very close, not if you're Greek or Cypriot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right, okay. Question number two. What is the full name of the character played by Eddie Murphy in the Beverly Hills Cop movies?
Axel Foley.
Correct, Axel Foley. There. Question number three. Which sportsman topped the Forbes list for the highest paid athlete in 2020?
Ever been on the Forbes list, Jim?
Oh, I make a regular appearance. I'm allowed a clue. Is he still competing?
Oh, he's after a clue, isn't he?
Is he still competing?
He is, yes.
Okay.
So it's not Conor McGregor. That's what you're thinking now.
Do you know I've seen it? I want to say Lewis Hamilton, but it's not my final.
You want to say it or you're going to say it?
No, it's not final. It's not my final answer. Do you know, I think I've even seen this. Who was number one? LeBron James.
Incorrect. Roger Federer.
Really?
Roger Federer, yeah, highest paid athlete.
I want a stewards on that. How can Roger Federer be earning more than LeBron at the moment?
No sponsorships, I'm guessing. Night
we'll have stewards. No, we'll have there. Stewards on that, Frankie.
Right. Question number four.
Need this one.
Which worldwide company has used the slogan "Impossible is nothing" since 2007?
Nike.
You've dived in there, Jim. Adidas.
No, I can't. I'm contractually forbidden from saying the A word. So I would have said that. I would have actually said that, but contractually I can't. So I should get another question for that. You can't ask me a question that I'm not legally allowed to say the answer to.
Well, Jim, you can only draw.
Just, I think Nike's okay. Just do it. Nike, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You're not impossible. There's nothing Adidas, yeah.
So he needs this to draw with the likes of Danny Graham,
Chris McGuire.
You're in that batch, sorry.
There's a few in there. Right, number five. From which country does Stella Artois originate?
I think there's a knee-jerk answer there, isn't there?
There is a knee-jerk answer there. I actually drink it.
Yeah.
So the knee-jerk is clearly France, but the possibility is Belgium, isn't it?
I'm going to give you a clue, Jim. It's one of those two answers.
Thank you very much.
You're down to 50-50.
France.
You need this. If you don't get this, you're bottom of the quiz.
It's Belgium.
Is it really?
It's Belgium, yeah.
That's why I think. Listen, what I need to do is make our players feel better.
True.
Yeah. I knew the answer clearly to those, but I was being humble and modest. And I need our players to do better than me. In every way. So 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5, Jeff.
Luckily, I've got editorial control over
couple
this.
Couple of crossbars in there.
We might be slashing that. You're going on Google right now to find another 5 questions.
5 more questions.
You find 5 more questions. Right, Kev, call that a day.
Well, that is the end of this. Danny, you had any more to add?
No, I think it's gone well. And thanks for being honest, Jim. Yeah, we look forward to the game tomorrow at Portsmouth.
And will you be updating the fans in the future, maybe before Christmas?
Updates? I know that I think some of our other, probably we might have to get David on. Hopefully we can get David Jones on.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. Listen, it's a great medium, to be honest with you, just to be able to talk and hopefully get the message out. And sometimes it's just a little bit more inviting, probably, than, you know, statements on websites and things like that.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
So that was Sunderland Chief Executive Jim Rodwell speaking to us here on SAFC Unfiltered. He didn't swerve any questions, did he, Danny?
No, he didn't. I thought he'd be like that, Jim. We spoke to him in the past, in and around the stadium in recent weeks at the games, and I think he likes to try and be as open as he can. He has touched on, you know, we've asked him about the possibility of the takeover, and it does seem that there's something there. He couldn't go into full detail, which is understandable at this time, but yeah, it looks like there's something possibly going to develop in the next few weeks. And in general, he seemed happy with the way things are going. He's obviously disappointed in terms of the fans not being allowed into the stadium, which is obvious. But hopefully, as I say, we can in the next few weeks coming, or the months certainly, that can be addressed, and we can get some fans into the stadium. But yeah, in general, I thought he seemed happy with the way things are going at the club. Certainly on the pitch, the way things are progressing, and let's hope we can continue that.
You managed to get your quiz in there as well, Danny. Very poor show from Jim, though.
Yeah, I think we had big hopes for Jim, didn't we? I think we did look into him, and he was on Britain's brainiest footballer, wasn't he, a fair few years ago? So we were expecting big things, but it didn't materialise into that, and he got off to a bad start with the cheese question, the halloumi cheese question, and never really recovered, did he? So he finds himself at the bottom of the leaderboard. Yeah, I think he was a little bit disappointed in himself, but Luke O'Neill retains his spot up at the top of the leaderboard, doesn't he? So we'll see who else we get on in the next coming weeks.
Yes, I imagine we'll be doing another pod before we know it. Games coming thick and fast. If you are listening for the first time, or maybe you're listening and you haven't subscribed yet, please do on all of your podcast platforms. Thanks for listening, everyone. You've been enjoying SAFC Unfiltered, sponsored by Alpha Security. I'll see you next time.
Bye for now.